You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey there, America. I am Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman once again. I'm very glad to be here, and welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. If any of you forgot who I am, I'm also a nationally syndicated radio host. I am a progressive. I am a female, in case you didn't notice, because you can see me on Free Speech TV as well as listen to me on the radio, online, and everywhere here and throughout the world. I invite you to join me in all 3 hours this afternoon, and we're going to have some guests, we're going to have some topics, we're going to have a great show. 866-987-TOM is the number. That's 866-987-8466. And for Free Speech TV, 866-745-2667. Today is 1 year after the Boston Marathon bombing, as it's become known. And we're going to be talking with a special guest in this hour, and we're going to be talking with you. But before we get to our guest, I wanted to just briefly tell you that I'm from Boston. And although I live in Los Angeles and I sit here broadcasting from my studio in L.A., my mom lives there. I'm a Boston girl. I'm a Beantown girl. And when I saw that bombing on Boylston Street, a street I walked down so many times, I've worked on. I went to university, both undergrad and graduate, not far from there, just a stone's throw away. It really tugged at my heart because it was home. Much like many of you, all of us on 9/11 and the day of the bombing in Boston, we felt a part of that city, a part of those people. It really tugged on our heart because that's when we as a nation really come together and become united, I feel. But certainly cities do. And I think we saw that in Boston like no other city under siege that we've seen before. We're going to be taking your calls in a little bit. But first, I want to talk with our guest on this tonight. And more than a pleasure to welcome to the program. Where am I, guys? More than a pleasure to welcome to the program is Russ Baker. Russ is an editor and Russ is an editor of Who, What, Why. And I love the Who, What, Whys. Hi, Russ. Good evening. And thank you for joining us. I have to say good afternoon. I'm on at night. I'm so used to saying good evening. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us and welcome.
Hi, Leslie. I'm on the road. I'm in Seattle. So any reference to any time of day is fine.
Okay, sounds good. So you are where I am. Russ, so many things to talk about. First of all, you know, I have a Boston Strong T-shirt. I should be wearing it today, but I wasn't sure about, like, logo, rights, and I didn't want to get sued, especially sitting in for Tom, cause problems for Free Speech TV. But I definitely have one, and I wear it. Did Boston show their strength today? We saw things online that said, you know, love is stronger than hate. And we also know that practically 5,000 people who were not able to complete the marathon last year came, over 36,000 people running today.
Yeah. You know, Leslie, one thing about our website, whowhatwhy.com, is I think we have a reputation for being pretty blunt. And what I want to say is this. Nobody was more horrified by what happened in Boston. Nobody was more delighted by the positivity of the people in Boston than people who are part of our editorial team. However, we are all about facts, and we are investigative reporters. So while we appreciate a slogan like that, we actually found the slogan itself a little bit strange, because when you say Boston Strong, the question would be Boston Strong about what and at what and to whom. And I don't know how much you've seen of what we've done, but Who, What, Why has been the leader in the news business in covering and in investigating what can be learned about the bombings themselves since the bombing happened. And one of the things we've been most concerned about is that the very authorities who are using this term Boston Strong are suppressing critical information that the public needs to be able to assess what actually happened there. And from the beginning...
Wait a minute. Let me ask you this. Why is it wrong for T-shirt companies and others to make money and to create business and commerce? Why is it wrong for people to adopt a slogan? Because I don't feel Boston Strong was, my understanding is Boston Strong was adopted by a t-shirt company, not far from the former Boston Garden. So I understand what you're saying, but I don't think we need to take away that slogan. That slogan got some of these people through when they were having their limbs amputated. That slogan gave some of these people hope that they would run again, walk again, dance again, as we have seen from so many people being interviewed on television and what they share on Facebook and Twitter online on social networking sites.
I don't mind any slogan. My concern is the purposes behind them. There were giant rallies that were held about the bravery of Officer Sean Collier, and WHO-WHY was the first news organization to report that the government has been falsifying the conditions under which Officer Collier actually died. Now, it's tragic that he died, but it's even more tragic that they would use this man's death, which is a seemingly senseless death, to create a kind of a unanimity of conclusion as to what happened in this thing. In other words,
but you know what? With all due respect, Russ, and I've had relatives that have fought in almost every war. Russ, with all due respect, I've had relatives that have fought in almost every war. And if a man or woman is walking down the street or was in Iraq, as an example. If a man or woman is walking down the street and there's an explosion and they die, they still will say, the president will say, at the funeral they will say, in eulogies they will say, this person died a hero. Were they a hero walking down the street and got blown up? And no disrespect to any of our military that have been slain in this manner. But is that disrespectful to honor and to elevate? I think we elevate everybody after they die. My father was a great dad. He was even a better dad after he died, in my mind, because I think we elevate people once they're gone.
Many wars, and most radio stations in America have this same conversation, and that's fine. But time is short, and the reality is that what we need to know is who was behind that bombing. And what was that about? Now, as you probably
think with the slogan Boston Strong and with the anniversary and the tribute that Tsarnaev being in jail you don't think that the authorities, not just the authorities in the city of Boston, the state of Massachusetts, but within our federal government working with Massachusetts and Boston are trying to find that out? A picture speaks a thousand words. We have the pictures. We have a video. They have live shots of these guys.
Here's the problem. I mean, I think that we're going to have a conversational difficulty here unless I'm able to state the results of our reporting. We've published thousands of words. We've published many, many documents. I think the most important thing is this. If you think that the government is telling the truth about what happened there, I refer you to Senator Charles Grassley, a Republican of Iowa, who is the ranking Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee. We have posted on Who, What, Why, and I encourage you to read it, letters that he has written to the FBI since a year ago asking about information indicating that the FBI may have known much more about and have had much more of a relationship with the Tsarnaev family since long before the bombing, and that, as Senator Grassley points out, this fits a pattern that the New York Times has reported on, where 14 out of the 22 alleged terrorist attempts in the United States involved people who were already in contact with the FBI. They were essentially, you can use the term informant or you can use something else. In other words, there is much more complexity here to this issue than what the public has been told. And the rush to judgment of naming these guys and saying that they did it long before any kind of trial, and in the absence of the FBI, the Boston police, the Cambridge police, releasing critical information, what they have done is they have leaked. And this is very malicious, by the way, Leslie.
Well, I don't think everybody will disagree with you on the leaking, Russ. And we appreciate you being with us, Russ Baker, editor of Who, What, Why. We're going to take your calls on this. But we're talking about a Republican senator. We're talking about a Republican, right, Grassley, a Republican senator who is going to trash anything that a Democratic president by the name of Barack Obama heads under his federal government.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Coming up, we're going to take your calls on the Boston Marathon bombing 1 year ago today. Call us at 866-986. Hey there, everyone at Free Speech TV. Give us a buzz at 866-745-2667. I'm asking a lot of questions, and I'm going to share a little bit of my own personal story and history and connection with the city of Boston, where I hail from. 1 year ago today, the terrible bombings, well, obviously not 1 year ago today, but the marathon was today in Boston, a year after. We are taking your calls on this. You may have just heard the interview with Russ Baker. Do you think the FBI knew more than they're telling? Has there been a rush to judgment against Tsarnaev? Has there been too much information leaked? Is Boston strong? The wrong logo to be had? 866-987-TOM for Free Speech TV, 866-745-2667. And let's go to it. Joining us on Free Speech TV in the great state of Arkansas is Susan. Hey, Susan. Good afternoon. How are you?
Well, I'm good. How about you?
Good, thank you.
Okay, my saying is not about the Boston Marathon. And I'm a little bit nervous, so please bear with me.
No problem. I've had many people nervous. It's like dancing. I'll lead, and you'll be fine.
Okay. Well, here I am. I'm a retired lady, and kind of a low income, Social Security, and so I qualify for a rural development loan. This is something where they help you finance repairs on your home at a low interest rate, and you pay it back monthly, just like you would any other. And so a couple of times I've had to have some major work, and I ask about solar. And I was told that I couldn't have that because that's considered a luxury by the government. And yet I hear our president and different ones talking about the advocacy of renewable energy. And so the second time I had to replace my heating and air conditioning here, and I looked around, and it was a sunny day, and there isn't a solar panel anywhere on rich or poor home anywhere. I don't get it. I'm paying for the loan, but I can't have what I think I need, and also to try to help with, I believe, what is really going on with climate change. In fact, I think climate change is the correct word. As far as the Boston Marathon, I don't have any input on that. But my question is...
Well, you don't have any input on that. I bet you do, Susan. Do you mind if I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
First of all, if you don't mind answering, because it is a very personal issue, although political issue, the death penalty. Are you in favor of the death penalty or opposed?
My heart says that I'm opposed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I think that there is a place for it.
If Tsarnaev is found guilty, is there a place for it there?
You know, that's such an ethical question for me. It's hard to answer because I don't believe in killing anyone, anything really. And I think that the man and his brother pulled off a very heinous crime in this country. What you asked earlier was, did the FBI know anything? I think if their lips are wiggling, they're probably lying.
Okay,
that's how I usually think about it. I think that whatever they're saying to your face, you better think reverse in this government anymore.
All right, Susan, thank you for that, and thank you for your opinion on climate change and solar energy, renewable energy, and alternative means of energy. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. Call me. We're going to take your calls for the rest of the hour. No guests, just you and me, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466, and for Free Speech TV. Hey there, how are you doing, everyone out there in the U.S. of A. and beyond? I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. Keep in mind the number, because in this rest of the hour and for the next 2 hours, I'm going to be taking your calls constantly. We'll have some guests joining us briefly from time to time, but I want to hear from you. 866-987-TOM is the number. That's 866-987-8466. And for Free Speech TV, 866-745-2667. A brief little background regarding me. Today is the day of the marathon in Boston, with no bombings, one dead Tsarnaev brother, one behind bars. And when we look back, hindsight's always 20/20. I know that when I watched it on television, I cried. I had tears streaming down my face. I worked at Lord & Taylor where the camera was on the corner. I worked in the Prudential Center, my very first job at a radio station, even though I wasn't on the air, WEEI on the 44th floor of the Pru, headed up toward the top of the hub. I ran down that street by the Heinz Auditorium where some of the tributes today and last week were held in a rush from taking the subway called the T in Boston around the corner to get to work on time at both of those places. Diagonally across from Lord & Taylor, there was a very tiny makeshift memorial for a temporary amount of time. I went home to visit my family, as my family is still there, and I go there about a couple of times a year between holidays, weddings, funerals. And I was walking down Boylston Street with my mom, and my mom said, I want to go to the site of the bombing. I said, so do I. So we went to the site of the bombing on Boylston Street, and there were a few flowers, and we turned around, and behind us there was a big piece of cardboard across a store window that said, we got bombed, we're renovating, be patient, we'll be back. And I started to cry. Because I own a Boston Strong t-shirt, and at that moment, I understood what it meant to be Boston Strong. I remembered who I am, where I came from, the kind of person I am. We're stronger than this. We can get through this. We can get beyond this. We can move forward. Today, approximately 5,000 of the people from a year ago that could not finish the race are in the race. Over 36,000 people running the race. They will not let terrorism, they will not let danger deter them. But looking back, there are still a lot of questions that have not been answered, and a lot of questions that some of you might have, and perhaps you have your own opinions or theories, and I'd like you to share them with me today. One, some would say that the FBI knew more than they knew, especially about Tamerlan. They had interviewed him on more than one occasion. Do you think that the FBI knew more than they're letting on? And that there's some kind of a cover-up there. I know tons of you carry a grassy knoll with you. 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466, 866-745-2667 for Free Speech TV. And what about Catherine Russell? Could she have been in a one-bedroom apartment and not known what her husband was doing, what he was building, who he was angry at, what his plan was? Could she? 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466, 866-745-2667. And for those of you out there who are listening to me, you're liberals, you're progressive, you're Democrats, many of you, not all of you, but many of you, and you are against the death penalty. By the way, I am not. I am in favor of it. Changed my mind a few years ago. I'll share that with you sometime. And for those of you who are against the death penalty, is it hard for you to wrap your head around keeping someone like Tsarnaev in prison for the rest of his life if, in fact, he is one of or the man who did this? 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466, or for Free Speech TV, 866-745-2667. And I'm going to share some more things, but let's get to the calls. And let's start it out first with Dave at KGOE in Humboldt, California. Hi, Dave. Thank you for joining us. How you doing? Is Dave there? Oh, no, Dave's not ready. Okay, then I will go to Dana in Denver. Hi, Dana. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Hi, Leslie. Great.
Hi.
Yes. You know, I just tuned in and caught the end of the fellow that was on before from Who, What, Why, but it has been a problem ever since the event for me. In light of what we now know of the extent of the NSA surveillance of every word and text and virtually keystroke that we make in our lives, that plus the two interviews by the FBI, the warnings from Russia, the open publishing of a terrorist website that he did after, you know, the interviews from the FBI, to believe that none of this was being monitored or watched or was, you know, we were aware of, that somehow we're just, you know, the government is so incompetent that they just dropped the ball is really inconceivable.
Dana, two questions. One, Grassley's a Republican. Where was he questioning things after 9/11? And second, isn't that our nature? After 9/11, there were a lot of people, myself included, who really feel the plane in Pennsylvania was shot down. There are many people in the United States that believe there were no outside terrorists, that these 19, Muhammad Atta and the 18 others, were scapegoats. There are a lot of conspiracies. There are a lot of theories regarding what happened after 9/11, as there are now after the Boston bombing. So do you think it's like our American nature to be so skeptical? And speaking of skeptical, are you skeptical of a Republican questioning the federal government and how transparent and honest and forthright it's being when he didn't do so after 9/11?
Well, as far as the Grassley questioning that, I mean, in the political arena, it's all seems to be opportunism, mm-hmm. and image. I'm an air traffic controller, and I witnessed, you know, the second plane go in live. I witnessed the so-called airplane hitting the Pentagon. I mean, witnessed through TV. But it was obvious from the beginning that whatever hit the Pentagon had no wings because there were unbroken windows on either side.
I've heard so much stuff, and Danny, you would know more, but we got to take a break. Thank you for your call there in Denver. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back to your calls. I hope you enjoy.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Should Tsarnaev be put to death if found guilty? Could it be that he's not guilty at all? And could it be that guilty are the federal government and the investigators who knew more than they're telling? Hey there, how you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Gotta remember to keep looking. I'm not seen on TV, on Free Speech TV yet. Hopefully soon that will be something that's definitely on my. I would like that to happen in 2014. Sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. We're going to take your calls, and we're talking about the Boston bombing. A lot of things looking back that people question. Did the FBI know more than they're letting on? Could Tsarnaev be innocent? Or part of a bigger group and a bigger picture? How much did our federal government know? How much are they hiding from us? And with Edward Snowden's revelations about the NSA, do you believe anything they say anymore? 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466 is the number. Let's go to the calls, and let's start it out with Dave at KGOE in Humboldt, California. And we're going to be on KGOE soon, back on the Leslie Marshall Show, I'm glad to say. Hi, Dave. How are you doing? Good afternoon.
Oh, great. We've been missing you up here on the North.
And I miss you very much, all of you. So I'll be glad to be back. It'll be happening
next
month.
Yeah, well, it'll be good to have you back. I'm also Bertrand Russell in the chat room, and I share the suspicions of some of your callers and the ones you're raising there. I do believe that we largely have federal agents, FBI, whatnot, appointed by the likes of Dick Cheney. I do believe 9-1-1 was an inside job. I do believe the assassination of Kennedy has been a 50-year cover-up. So when something else happens now, I have to look with grave suspicion. Republicans are in the business of deceiving us about everything, and Democrats fail miserably on confronting it or exposing it. And so we are largely being disinformed, and we better know about it and try to do something about it if we can. That's one man's view.
Well, Dave, I'm glad that you shared your view. I want to tell you something. I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, in a suburb of Boston, and my grandmother was best friends with Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis's mother, and they belonged to a French-speaking garden club type of thing. And as a child, even though I didn't know what this place was, I actually went to the Kennedy compound, and I was playing there, and I think there are pictures of me somewhere. I always joke that when you're born in Massachusetts, they, you know, hit your butt, you cry, and then they tell you, make sure to love God and the Kennedys, you are a Democrat. Just joking. But when I went to Dallas, Texas, and when I stood in the window of the book depository where Lee Harvey Oswald allegedly shot former President JFK, I didn't believe that the bullet could have shot him from that location unless, and not even because of the single bullet theory, but unless you had a gun that was made of rubber and could loop around the corner. And for anybody that has stood in that window, I think you know what I'm talking about. So to see it with my own eyes, Is that conspiracy theory, or is that like, you know, if it's a duck, you know, cracks like a duck, it's got webbed feet, maybe it's a duck. Dave, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's continue, and we go to George in Diamond, California. How you doing, George? George, you're listening through the stream, tomhartman.com. Thank you for that. How you doing? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Actually, I'm in Diamond Bar, California.
But I know Diamond Bar. I'm not that far from Diamond Bar right now. I live and broadcast in L.A. County, but it said Diamond, so who am I to question the guy standing in the call?
I'm in L.A. County, but I am a Missouri and California attorney. I was a prosecutor 25 years ago, and I've got a point on the death penalty, and that is, of course, that there are only two functions of the death penalty. One is deterrence, the general deterrence against the population committing the crime that we consider so heinous will extract the ultimate punishment. The second one is specific deterrence. That individual will never commit another crime. The problem we have is general deterrence has been routinely disproved. The implementation of the death penalty is more costly than warehousing individuals, and actual innocence, according to the Supreme Court in Gregg versus Georgia, is not a defense to an execution given a procedurally proper trial, appeal, habeas, writ, and boom. Otherwise, you have to have the chief executive of the state provide clemency. It was immediately challenged because the chief of the state of Texas, the governor, does not have the right to provide clemency, only the Board of Pardons and Paroles, and they're not required to act. So we have a dysfunctional process that we have shown does not dissuade third parties. The cost of executing one person is far greater than keeping them incarcerated. The fact that we have errors in our system is indisputable. The DNA evidence proves it. All around, it is something that we should be free from. Justice Stevens, retired now that he is, thinks that we would be far better off without a death penalty. And he was one of the co-authors of the case that brought the death penalty back after the 76 determination that it was unconstitutional. That's my position. I think that it's pretty much as cut and dried as it can get. We don't benefit in any way. In fact, if our government is one that we question, why should we assume that death is something we're willing to mete out? If we question them on any other level, why at that level are we trusting them?
I'm not even going to comment on that, George, and the reason, because this is not a death penalty argument, and I have no, even though I'm in favor of the death penalty, I agree with you. Not in the form, I've always said I agree with the death penalty, but not in the form it's carried out. It's absolutely not a deterrent to crime. But I do think, and I know from my own liberal friends and those people who watch me on television, I am a Fox News contributor. Yes, I am a liberal. And on my radio show, and who respond to my column for U.S. News and World Report, and when I blog for politics, that they will often say to me, Leslie, I'm against the death penalty, but when it comes to terrorists like Fort Hood or anyone connected to 9/11 and Tsarnaev, they feel hypocrisy within themselves and they don't know how to grapple with that. George, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's continue with the calls and let's go to patient and holding in Imperial Beach, California. Beautiful place, great place to surf. I'm Free Speech TV is Michael. Hi, Michael. How you been? I have sat on Imperial Beach with my surfer brother, and it's just a beautiful location. How you doing?
How you doing, Leslie? It is a great place. But I used to live in West Concord Street in the Back Bay. I used to work on the 44th floor of the John Hancock building. I used to live in Winthrop in Beachmont.
Yep.
But I'd like to ask you a different question. Finally, this is a question I asked Dr. Newcomb and Tom Hartman, and now that I got a woman here, if women were in control of this planet, do you think we'd have aircraft carriers? Now, women share childbirth. Men share nothing. Men want to take your wife. They want to take your property. They want to take everything. So what do you think this world would look like if women were in control of this planet from day one?
Well, I do think we'd have aircraft carriers. And Michael, don't laugh, but I've always thought that Aristophanes' Lysistrata had a pretty good idea. If we withheld sex from all of you, you'd chill out. And I say that because, if you know, historically, men start wars. I mean, how many of these, how many women were, you know, on the plane? Is Tsarnaev a female? Definitely we have our times, and I know people are going to think I'm sexist. Is a reality to hormonal imbalance and PMS. But I do feel that women, categorically are better organized, more organized, or better multitaskers. And I do think that although they can be, very hot-headed, I do think that perhaps they try to practice counting to 10, and I'm very impatient, but, you know, more than just the knee-jerk reaction. And that's something the United States of America has, especially when Republicans are in control. We have a knee-jerk reaction. Somebody bombed us. Let's go kill the blankety-blanks. You know, and I don't feel that, you know, women, if they ruled the world, and we are the majority of the population in the world and in the United States. So for me as a woman to even be labeled a minority is technically not accurate. But hopefully, at least in this country, we will see after the 2016 presidential election what this nation would be like with a woman running it, because I very much hope Hillary Rodham Clinton runs, and I would vote for her, and I certainly hope she would be elected. Michael?
Okay. Well, again, last thing I said, thank you, but I've been to four Boston Marathons, and Boylston Street is a great place to have
beautiful,
a fun time, and yep.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate
that.
And I hope that the female answer was sufficient for you. Let's continue with the calls, and we go to Lemon Grove, California. A lot of Cali today. I'm here in Cali. Beautiful day here. Hi, Richard. How are you? Good afternoon and welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Working backward from your show first, I agree with you and the last caller about more women running the world. A long time ago, I was thinking back, what's causing all the world's problems? And it came down to men, and more specifically, old white men. So that was a big epiphany for me, and my wife agreed. Anyhow, more women and running the world would be great. And working from that,
I love you already, Richard. You're a feminist.
Thank you.
That's very sexy. Tell your wife she's very lucky.
Thank you very much. And from there to the 9/11, we were living in Mexico at the time, and immediately after it happened, I looked it up online, and I saw some photographs that have since been taken down, but they were confiscated film from those cameras that are all over the place.
Yeah.
And one showed a very low flying, what appeared to me, you know, in my untrained eye, to be a missile. And then after that, it showed the hole in the Pentagon that this object made. No sign of any wings or any big old stuff like that.
Yep, some people have talked about that before. Richard, thank you. Thank you for the compliment. Thank you for the call. I'm Leslie Marshall. Two more hours to come here on the Tom Hartman Show. I fill in for him, and I hope he'll join us. 866-987-TOM, which is 866-987-8466.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Coming up, taking more of your calls at that number, 866-987-TOM. We'll be taking them from radio, from free speech, TV, and more as I, Leslie Marshall, sit in. Hi, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program. We are talking about the Boston Marathon today that is taking place. We're talking about Tsarnaev, the federal government. Did they and do they know more than they're telling us? Could Tsarnaev be innocent? And if found guilty, how do you reckon, if you're against the death penalty and wrap your head around him living for the rest of his life in prison? By the way, I want to talk about some phone calls that he's receiving. And what about the wife of his brother, Tamerlan, his sister-in-law? Could she not have known? I have some opinions on that, but I want to hear yours. 866-987-TOM is the number. That's 866-987-8466. Let's get to the calls, and let's go to Massachusetts. You're in Tunis Falls, Mass. Greg, good afternoon.
Yeah, how you doing? I just wanted to say...
Wait, Greg, can I just tell you something first? I am born, bred, and raised in Boston, born in Fall River, grew up in Somerset, went to school in Boston, and don't hate me, I have never heard of Tunis Falls. Can you imagine?
No, it's Turner's.
Oh, Turner's Falls. That I've heard of. Okay.
Yeah,
hi, Greg. How are you? Good afternoon.
I'm doing all right. With regards to the Boston Marathon bombing, I'm going to just make 2 points. This is the first one. With regards to the Boston Marathon bombing, I live out here in Western Massachusetts, and enough is enough. We've heard enough. We've been fed this 24/7 for over a year now. This is like more than just an event now. This has turned into a talking point, and enough is enough to make it stop. And the other thing I want to say.
No, wait a minute. Then how do you talk to the survivors or the families of those that are deceased that need to be able to heal and need to be able to move forward and to function to talk about this?
I think a lot of them want to move forward, I think, by letting it go, moving on now, okay?
Are you one of the survivors?
No, no. I understand the event and everything, but, you know, we're fed this a lot through the media. I mean, more than a lot, to the point.
Well, I understand. I mean, believe me, I'm like I said, I'm from Boston. My whole family says they get it, you know, 24/7 on radio and TV. But this is not just a national and international program. I'm sitting in for Tom, and Tom doesn't talk about the marathon or Boston issues day in and day out.
Well, we hear it 24/7. It's on NECN and New England Cable News. It's on.
I'm aware of that. So sorry if we disappoint you in that regard. But being that today is the day of the marathon, I think we in a sense have responsibilities as broadcasters sometimes to touch upon breaking news such as this. It was my choice.
That's okay. And the only other thing I want to say, and I'll get off the phone here, is with regards to what you said a little earlier about how Bernie Sanders couldn't win. I think it's a little presumptuous for you to come on Tom Hartman's show and tell us that Bernie Sanders can't win. I talked to a lot of progressive Democrats.
No, it's nothing against Mr. Sanders. You're misunderstanding. It's a numbers game. It's an electoral college that are going to vote for Republicans and Democrats, and therefore a person has to identify as such, and he does not. That's the reality, even though I think he'd be a great president.
He does not what, did you say?
He does not identify. There are two parties in this country, and I'll be honest with you, I do not like our two-party system. I do not like the fact that we have our candidates win by electoral college. But until we change the system, we need to work within the system. And the way the system is it comes down to a Democrat and a Republican, and one of those individuals will win. And that is not presumptuous. That is a numbers game. Just like when people came on that were nonpartisan, national television and radio, and talked about how Barack Obama would win. And they showed the map of the United States, and they showed three different ways he would win. With Ohio, without. With Florida, without. Without both. That, it is a numbers game. It is a reality. And it's one of the reasons Mitt Romney didn't hold off for days congratulating him, because he knew that reality as well.
Well, okay. Well, I totally disagree with that whole position here. You know, Bernie Sanders isn't bought and paid for by anyone, and I understand.
Well, that's true, but unfortunately, with the rulings by the Supreme Court, that money and those corporations have that power. We cannot ignore the reality, and that is a reality.
Well, the reality is a lot of people I talk to aren't really kicking the door down for Hillary Clinton. Not excited at all.
Polls prove you wrong, Greg. Polls prove you wrong. And I got to be honest, as much as I like Bernie, I have a daughter who turned 6 this week, and I have a hard time telling her she can be anything she wants in this country when we, unlike Pakistan, when we, unlike Peru, when we, unlike Germany, Israel, India, the UK, the list goes on, have not had a woman lead this nation. And that bothers me as a female.
Well, I'd rather have someone that's not bought and paid for. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
You too, Greg. You too. And you know what? A lot of people feel that way. So would I. So would I would like it if the Koch brothers didn't have billions of dollars and didn't funnel money through for their Tea Party candidates like Ted Cruz, but they do, and that is a reality. And Rand Paul will run and have a lot of money and maybe even get the nomination. Why? Because of the money. That is a reality. We can either live with what we have or change what we have. And until we change the electoral system, which I do not believe will happen in my lifetime, and if it does, it'll take at least 50 more years and I'll be an older broad by then. Then we have to work within the parameters of what we have. As a matter of fact, I bet you Bernie Sanders would agree with me on that. 866-987-TOM, 866, because he's a very intelligent man, but he is a realist. He is a realist who is passionate about what he believes, and I'm not sure he'd want to be president. Let's continue with the calls, and we go to Paul in SoCal watching us on Free Speech TV. Hi, Paul. How are you? Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to say, first of all, the death penalty is morally wrong. I mean, when you're a child, your mom or your grandparents, whoever raised you, taught you two wrongs never make a right. So what makes you think the death penalty is going to be right? It's a wrong. Killing somebody is wrong. Bottom line.
Well, killing somebody, is there a difference between murder And is there, in your mind, is there a difference between murder and carrying out an execution? Because there are many that can separate, as I do, those two in my mind. For example, when we send people to war, when we send our military to war to defend us, whether to protect our home here or to protect Americans and others abroad, are we sending them to actually commit immoral acts?
I believe we are.
I don't think you're alone in that belief. And honestly, Paul, I would love if we could all in the world hold hands and sing Kumbaya, but I just don't believe the world is that black and white. Unfortunately, the lion doesn't lie with the lamb. Sorry to quote the Bible there, Paul. Thank you for your call. We've got to take a break. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Program.
Listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show. So please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey there, how you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. I am Leslie Marshall, and I am a nationally syndicated talk show host who is syndicated and heard 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern throughout the country. You can check it out at LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. You can also follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall and like my fan page, Facebook.com/TheLeslieMarshallShow. In this hour, I wanted to continue our conversation. A lot of people holding, and I will get to your calls. If you want to join in the chat, 866-987-TOM is the number, 866-987-8466. Today, the city of Boston marks the first anniversary of the marathon bombing with a day of tributes. Bells tolled across the city, and at 2:49 p.m. Eastern, they marked the moment of the first blast. Ceremonies have been attended by survivors, victims, families, certainly media. There are 5,000 individuals approximately that could not complete the race last year who were there today, and more than 36,000 to run. The phrase Boston Strong has come up. We discussed last hour with Russ Baker why he doesn't like it and he thinks that the government's hiding things. But there are some other things I want to talk about with regard to this. So that you understand, I grew up in Boston. I did my undergraduate work at Northeastern University, my graduate work at Emerson College, both just blocks away from the site of the bombing on Boylston Street. I mentioned last hour I worked on that street at both Lord & Taylor and the Prudential Center. And I, like most of the nation, cried when I saw the bombing. See, Patriots Day when I was a kid and even an adult was a day off, a day out of school, a day off of work. Rhode Island always had Veterans Day. We didn't get that. And that was our day. That was Marathon Day. Boston is a city of neighborhoods. You have the North End, which is Italian. You have Back Bay. You have the South End, which is more of the gay population now and started to become that way when I used to live there. I live in Los Angeles now. You have the Irish section of town, the Jewish section of town, the African-American section of town. It is divided among neighborhoods, but there are events, sporting events with the Celtics and the Boston Red Sox and the Patriots and the Bruins, or tragedies like the Boston bombing, that bring this city together. The marathon, celebratory day, that has always brought this city together. You're walking by and somebody will hand you a soda or a beer or a burger, and they don't even know you. A city in the great state of Massachusetts, in New England, where we're considered to be kind of cold people, kind of abrupt. Do you know what time it is? No, I don't have a watch. Do you know where the restroom is? Yeah, where it says restroom. We are very blunt. But when we need to be, we can be so caring. We can be so loving. And yes, we can be so strong, Boston strong. I remember images of people running toward bombs and smoke, running to help people they didn't know, ripping off their own shirts to make tourniquets. I was proud of the people. I was proud of the city. And I think it's a testament to that and to the medical personnel in Boston, of some of the greatest medical facilities in the world, that so many people were able to live who were amputated that might have died, or that were able to keep their limbs if they had an injury where they were borderline. I know there are people, last hour, the guy named Greg in Massachusetts, that we're hearing this ad nauseum 24/7, but there are some things and some questions that have not been addressed. And there are things that I wonder about. And it's not just because I'm a Bostonian. I think it's because I'm an American, and we as Americans are curious. We're skeptical. Many of us are conspiracy theorists. So there are a few things I threw out and I asked of you, and I want to share a few more and then take your calls. There are many people that believe that the United States government knew more and knows more than it's letting on. Is that true? And should they tell us? Another thing. There are those of you that believe that Ron Paul was right and that the governor of the state made a mistake locking down that city, infringing upon the people's rights, turning the city of Boston and the state of Massachusetts into a military state. There are others that say, look, when you say to a, you're not forcing anybody, you're asking people, can we come in your home and search? We're looking for a man who may have bombs and may kill people. When you say to hotels, please keep your guest inside. When you say to taxis, please don't drop off or pick anyone up. And the same for buses and the T. When you shut the city down, without that, many say there was no way Tsarnaev could have been and would have been captured. Where do you stand on that? Where do you stand on that? In hindsight, always 2020, was this the right thing to do? Or despite the decision, do you feel it was an infringement upon the rights of the people and it better to let Tsarnaev perhaps have escaped from Massachusetts to another state in New England? Remember, I rode my bike to Rhode Island when I was a kid. The states in the Northeast, if you're from there, they're very small and very close together. And I live in California now. That is not the case. I can't ride my bike to Nevada or Oregon. Certainly not. There are some things that have come up in addition to that. Questions about Tamerlan's widow. What did she know? But there was something that happened recently, and, you know, I didn't really talk about it on my show, and because today is the marathon, I thought today would be the day to discuss it. And that is talking about and stating the name of Tsarnaev. We know that there are people that Adrienne Haslett Davis, for example, she lost a leg in the marathon attack. She backed out of an appearance on Meet the Press because producers would not promise to keep his name, Tsarnaev, out of the broadcast. Are we giving him more notoriety? Are we giving him more fame? And quite frankly, are we playing into him perhaps not getting a fair trial and opening the floodgates to appeal or to a mistrial by constantly naming him? Joanna Weiss, a Globe columnist, wrote a great piece entitled He Who Should Be Named. Should he be named? Are we innocent until proven guilty in this country? Tsarnaev included. 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466 is the number. Now, the Boston bomber, as they're calling him, Tsarnaev, innocent until proven guilty, is allowed contact with the outside world. He is in a solitary cell, and he is allowed to call his family once a week. He lives in isolation without TV. He has no access to the internet. Because of what he's been accused of, perhaps this is best. But is this cruel and unusual punishment? Or is this generous? How many people get one phone call? People who have been convicted are in 23-hour lockdown and solitary confinement, but there it stands, there it lies. He has not been convicted, but rather accused. There's a different standard when somebody is marked a terrorist, isn't there? So is it fair that he get the one phone call a day? Or should he be given more television? I get the no internet. 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466. And there are those of you who feel he is guilty, or feel if he is found guilty, that you have your own demons you're grappling with. You're against the death penalty. You think taking a life is wrong. You think it's not a deterrent to crime. But maybe you're from Boston. Maybe you know somebody who lost their life or their limb, and you want revenge, and for some reason, this is the only revenge you can find for Tsarnaev, and that is death. How do you wrap your head around that? I have a lot of liberal friends being from Boston who are in Boston who are against the death penalty, but they would make an exception for this guy. I heard that in Wisconsin with Jeffrey Dahmer years back. So a lot of questions. We're going to take a break coming up. We're going to take your phone calls, whether you're listening to me on the radio, listening to me online at TomHartmann.com, or watching me on Free Speech TV. Here are the questions. One, you're against the death penalty, but would you make an exception for Tsarnaev if he is found guilty? Two, could this guy really have just acted with his brother? Is our government telling us all they know? Should they tell us more? Three, should we keep saying his name, or should we stop? Four, is this guy going to get a fair trial? Is he innocent until proven guilty? One phone call a day, too little, too much? What about that sister-in-law of his? Could she not have known? I have a few thoughts on that. We'll be back. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartmann, 866-987-TOM, which is 866-987-8466.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Coming up right here on the Tom Hartmann Show, we're going to take your calls at 866-987-TOM. I'm Leslie Marshall. In the meantime, you can check out my website, LeslieMarshallShow.com. Hi, this is Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartmann. Thank you for watching me on Free Speech TV today. It's great to be a part of the broadcast. We're going to take your calls. You can join us. I think you see the number there, 866-745-2667. You always hear me say, and Tom, 866-987-TOM. Let's get to the calls, and let's start it out in Boston, my home city, with watching on Free Speech TV, Michael. Hi, Michael. How are you? Good afternoon.
I'm fine. I was going to talk about something absolutely different, but I will say a few things about this. First of all, what I have never heard in this whole thing is what ostensibly their grievances are. Now, they're people who, this is a horrible crime, and let's make the hypothesis that they committed it. He committed it. It's likely, given the evidence, but who knows, okay? But there are people with grievances, like the people whose children have died from deplete of uranium in Iraq, for example, and the people who have gotten cancer and died. I mean, there are people who have that type of grievance. But in the end, my feeling is, killing him or not, it doesn't bring the lives back. So whatever you do with him, what I would do if he was guilty is make him work 24/7 in hospitals caring for maimed people, and doing what he can, because killing him just does no good. That's my thoughts on that, okay?
Okay.
The other thing is, I'd like to really know what the grievances are of these people, because maybe they're legitimate, maybe they're not, but we are entitled to know.
When you say the grievances of these people, can you specify?
I mean, these people, meaning the people who did the bombing. I'd like to know what...
I know. I agree with you. If he is found guilty, why? Why? Although we have heard some speculation, and we have heard some things that were said in conversations
now,
and from the group that they apparently were aligned with.
Something.
Yeah, in Chechnya.
You know? I mean, the thing is, otherwise, it's like the act of God and Jonah and the whale or something. It's just I'm
there. Michael, do you think that the grievance, do you think that, you know, sometimes people just hate and don't have a reason, and I know that sounds shallow, but just hear me out. When we look at Afghanistan, they had many beefs, one of which is, if you excuse the very fraternity boy-like thing, we farted and left the room in Afghanistan. We gave them weapons and training. We helped build the Mujahideen and create Osama bin Laden. We promised them help after their fight with the Russians, and we abandoned them. We don't keep our promises all the time. And I'm not being anti-American. I love my nation. I think we have the greatest military in the world. But the reality is, in not keeping that promise, we may have created and been a part of our own carnage by a madman who, with anger and power in other people's anger was able to be elevated, and certainly with cash flow, to what he was. We also know that people are so tired of us throughout the country. We're seeing this in Yemen with recently more than a hundred of, the Al-Qaeda terrorists that escaped in February from the prison and some others that came along for the ride and that videotape that was released. We know that they feel throughout the world that we, the United States, with our military, protect oil, exploit their nation and their oil for our own profit, for our own gain, for our own greed. Michael, we're going to take a break. Hold on. I'm going to let you respond because I know you had something else to say. I'm Leslie Marshall, coming back in just a moment here on the Tom Hartman Show. I'm sitting in for Tom. I hope you'll join me. 866-987. Tom's the number. Coming right back to your calls. America, I'm Leslie Marshall and the world. I'm sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman program. During the break, I was taking some free speech TV calls. You can join us whether you're watching us or listening to us, however you're getting us. Thank you for tuning in. 866-987-TOM is the number. I was talking with Michael in Boston, Massachusetts. As you know, today is the Boston Marathon, 1 year after the bombing there. I'm from Boston originally. I live in Los Angeles now. And Michael and I were talking about what would the motive be of Tsarnaev if, in fact, he is the bomber. Right now, he is alleged that he and his brother, who is deceased, Tamerlan, have committed this heinous atrocity. Michael, thank you for holding, and welcome back here on the Tom Hartman Show. Michael, as I was saying during the break, and I was answering Michael's question as to why, hate. Two, there is something to be said. When you stand at the top and you beat your chest, the king of the hill, somebody always wants to push you down. And we see that a lot in the United States. We beat our chest a lot, and rightly so. We have pride, and we have a right to do so. But it doesn't mean there aren't going to be others who are angry, who are jealous, and try to take us down. And it may sound very simplistic, like something that happens on a preschool, schoolyard at recess, but that is part of the reality of human nature. The second thing, as I mentioned, the exploitation of their natural resources, oil. When we export oil from these countries, and when our corporations, we have our military guarding their refineries and guarding these wells, for many of these nations, we are taking away jobs from the people there. These people become impoverished, and they're hungry, and guess who's feeding them? Al-Qaeda. So we're actually helping to grow Al-Qaeda in Yemen, for example. Yemen has, in some areas, extreme wealth, but who has the wealth? The people who are negotiating with the United States and other companies in these large corporations, and what are they doing? They're basically selling their soul to the highest bidder, and quite frankly, we're viewed as devils. Additionally, for many that are religious, we feel that they feel that we are unwelcome and our military is unwelcome in their countries, especially in Saudi Arabia and some of the other countries where we are anywhere near a holy shrine or monument. And Osama bin Laden spoke to this. Osama bin Laden said, and I paraphrase, that he would put one motion into action and the United States would destroy itself. Perhaps it was a bit prophetic because we're pretty divided. And we do a heck of a job dividing further and working against each other rather than working together. Now, certainly, carnage such as this, terrorism, bombings, murder, violence, we have a lot of it within our own borders. But when it's brought in from within, or this anger is brought from the outside, I think they've been very clear, a lot of these groups. Specifically the Tsarnaev brothers, I don't know, but it seems to be a pattern, which is get out of our countries, stay away from our natural resources, and stop beating your chest, get off your high horse, and quit rubbing it in our faces. You want to help us, give us jobs, and feed us, which some of the American people are screaming to our government and these corporations to do right here.
I'd like to make a couple of comments.
Sure.
The first one is that, I'll make the second one first. Take Nazi Germany, where there's nobody these days who think that that's a debt. That what they were doing was defensible. It's one thing to try to overthrow the government, and it's another, and that would be the American government for these people in one way or another. It's another thing to go into Germany in that case and to just murder indiscriminately people who are having a good time. That is a different type of act, and I don't think I can't see that type of act ever justified. even if you hate the country with good cause. The second remark is that...
Michael, if I'm getting you right, you're saying Nazi Germany and the terrorist action Boston bomber 9/11 are different. I believe they're the same. They're both based on hate, and they both end in
Nazi
murder and carnage.
Germany
and they're wrong.
Is horrible, okay?
Right, they're horrible.
We have horrible traits. But if I went into Germany, and while the Nazis were in power, and indiscriminately just killed Germans for the hell of it, that's not justified. That's point one.
I agree.
Point two, and that's what these guys did. Point two is that you talk.
Michael, don't misunderstand. I'm not justifying any. I'm a peaceful pacifist kind of gal. I don't own a gun. I hate them. You can have one. I don't want it anywhere near me or my kids. I do not condone death.
Okay.
I do not condone murder.
Okay. The other point is you talk about Yemen, but if you read Thomas Piketty, which Hartman talked about, and I'm reading.
Actually, I had the author of that article on the front page of The Nation on my program last week, Piketty.
Yeah, if you read that, we're fast becoming like Yemen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about banana republics, but it's here. In fact, people have done studies, Larry Bartels years ago and some two guys at Basically, and show that most of the country's opinions vis-a-vis if they're at all different from the top 5% don't matter in regards to what their elected representatives do. So we might as well just have a vote among the top 1%. And things would run exactly the same. So,
Michael, I agree with you wholeheartedly there. Excellent comments today. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. By the way, I'm sorry. 866-987-THOMAS, T-H-O-M. I just know that's how you spell Tom's name, and I guess I assume everyone else knows for that matter, right? Let's continue with the calls, and let's go to Pat listening on WCPT in Chicago, a great city I used to live in for 4 wonderful years. Pat, how you doing? Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm listening to WCPT because they shut down our progressive station. I'm actually in San Diego. But, our voice is silenced everywhere.
Absolutely. As a progressive radio host, I can't tell you how many days I cry. If I see an email from my affiliate relations director, I cringe. I'm like, no, not another station that folds or
right.
goes conservative. I hear you.
Yeah, you can't have anybody say anything different, right? And this is my problem. I feel that the American people are being trained to always have this sports mentality where they are either with us or against us. You know,
mm-hmm.
You're either for the authorities or against them.
Okay, hold on, Pat, because you're making some very good points. I got to take a quick break, and I want to give you the chance to say what you have to say. Everyone should have the opportunity, right? I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Thank you for listening and watching us on Free Speech TV. Quick break, back to you, 866-987-TOM. It's T-H-O-M. Don't go away. I'm Leslie Marshall.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom. Check me out on my website, LeslieMarshallShow.com. I broadcast live 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Follow me on Twitter, at Leslie Marshall. I want to dance to this music. This and all the other great tunes they're playing in between. Not just great talk radio, great tunes in between, right? I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Good afternoon here. It is a Monday. It is the Boston Marathon Day, and we're talking about various aspects of that. Let's get back to the calls. 866-987-THOM. Tom is the number. We were talking with Pat in Chicago on WCPT, listening there to the program on WCPT. Pat, thank you for holding. Welcome back. You had started to say, why don't you start again? Because some people may have just tuned in. I want them to get everything that you wanted to share.
Oh, sure. Thank you very much. I believe, the American people are being treated to sports-type mentality everywhere, and I find that very scary because people tend to jump to conclusions in a very bad way on these very important issues like the Boston Marathon bombing. I believe there's a lot of inconsistencies that have been unanswered and that our agencies, I think, consider them rogue agencies. are never made to answer. There was an announced drill that morning before the Boston Marathon happened. It was announced on Twitter. It was also announced on the loudspeaker. There was a witness to that. He was a man from another country who said, you know, we've been told, oh, not to worry, that there's all of these armed men around. The place was crawling with all of these law enforcement people of all different kinds because there was a drill. Now, this has become like a blueprint for a terrorist attack. There is a pre-planned drill that sometimes is announced. You have the place crawling with all of these agencies, FBI, CIA, local police, mercenaries. In this case, the mercenaries, most of them, I believe, were from the Kraft Company. These are all very aggressive and horrible types of people who don't mind the violence. I think we are really under attack this way, and we are forced to believe what the authorities tell us because they repeat it over and over and over on all means of
you know what, I don't disagree entirely, Pat, but I have to say that in being a part of the media, being on radio, being on television, I'm on Fox News Channel and as a writer for U.S. News and World Report and Politics, there was a time where we knew nothing. And although we crave transparency, in my opinion, look, I want transparency, but I don't want so much transparency that we're showing the enemy our hand. And when I say the enemy, that's anybody, when you say we're under attack, who is planning perhaps to attack us in the future, whether here or abroad. I think there has to be some level of secrecy and transparency. So, Americans say they want full transparency. Well, then, you know, why not just call Al-Qaeda and tell them, you know, where our spies are? Why not just call Al-Qaeda and tell them what our plan is? Why not just call Al-Qaeda and tell them what we know? I'm not saying that of you. I'm saying that based on what you said. Certainly, right now, many of us have less of a trust in our government. But honestly, how many would feel as safe with any other government in the world and military if something like this were to happen again? I mean, there are people that lost their lives and lost their limbs in Boston. Yeah. The response to that was mind-blowingly incredible. My husband is an orthopedic surgeon, and he would tell you that city acted like a triage unit in the middle of Boylston Street, and that's pretty phenomenal, and you won't find that in many nations.
Okay. I did want to point out a few points that these people from that craft company were all dressed very similarly to what they said the Zokar brothers were dressed as, and they had similar backpacks.
Well, there are a lot of people, Pat, thank you for your call and for the information. There are a lot of people who feel that these two guys could not have acted alone. One of the things, speaking of acting, how did Zokhar Tsarnaev act completely American and have friends and hate everybody around him? Look, I live in Los Angeles. They give Academy Awards out here for people that live 20 minutes from where I'm broadcasting from. I don't think he could have been that good an actor. You know what I mean? I just don't buy that entirely. Let's continue with the calls. 866-987-THOM. And let's go next. Try and take some people have been holding a very long time. Let's go to Marty, very, very patient in St. Louis, Missouri, watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, how you doing?
All right, I'm blessed, dear, and thank you for taking my call. You brought up some very good points, and you were talking about how America creates a lot of the issues and stuff and problems, and we're starting to become introverted in a way because a lot of people feel there's a conspiracy around just about every corner, from the towers to this thing here, in which I'm very sorry that those people had to go through the situations that they have. But one thing that's bothered me is that we do things to ourselves. We have homegrown corporate and terrorists that will do things just for the sake of greed and profit, just like the cattle. There's been people talking about the cattle been killed off to raise the price of beef, and things like this have been done before. You know, we'll sit up here and destroy stuff so we can raise the price of it and people can be herded to buying stuff or having to pay for extra for the things that they need. And that's just like education now. You know, people are being made to be, I say, dumb in a way, because they can't either be fortunate enough to turn your show on and get all the information that they need to hear, and it's constantly being bombarded with useless information in some cases.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things you bring up. When you talk about beef, one of the things that's always bothered me, to beef up our men, especially going off to war in World War II, they started to inject the turkeys grow faster and bigger when you inject them with antibiotics. And then they can pay – what do you charge for a turkey or for beef when you go to the butcher? What? By the pound. So you're buying a heavier turkey. You're putting these antibiotics in your system. You're completely messing up your immune system. And we wonder why they're – and I could go into this. I'll go – this is another time. I had a parasite internally from something I ate that I almost died. I almost lost a year and a half of my life. I almost lost my life, my husband, my children, my job, my life. And these things – you know, are happening because we are destroying ourselves. Speaking of cattle, they don't need to be killing them off. The U.S. cattle herd shrank to a 63-year low. That is assisted with the record beef, the record cost on beef. And part of this is due to the drought. Drought here in California, drought in Texas, and some other, tragedies. So, you know, I agree with you. There are people that will do anything for cash and for greed. We need to look not only in our own borders and no further than our own borders, but if we do just to the south, I think the drug cartel in Mexico speaks volumes about that and that desire. Marty, thank you very much for joining us and for watching and for calling and for bringing that point up. Very interesting. There's so many ways, right? So many ways that we're hurting ourselves. It's almost like live for the now, make money for now, screw the people in the future, screw the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of these corporations and yours and mine. 866-987-THOM is the number. Let's go to Jeff in California, watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. I was calling in largely in one response to the Boston bombing, which was obviously quite a tragic event here in the United States. Perhaps an even larger issue for me when I see those kind of events happen. I sort of reflect back on when I was a kid. My dad was in the military for a career for 30 years, and we never knew really what he did. He worked for the Air Force, told us he flew airplanes. After he passed away in the early 90s at the eulogy, one of the officers there went through his military record and said that he had worked in counterintelligence for his entire career. And at that point, it illuminated a few things that he had talked about during the course of my childhood. In the early 60s, we lived in Springfield, Virginia, and he was the deputy director of war plans at the Pentagon. And the day that Kennedy was assassinated, he came home. It was obvious discussion about the Kennedy assassination and that what we had heard was Oswald had killed Kennedy. And my dad told us flat out that it wasn't Oswald that killed Kennedy, that it was done by a military coup. And Johnson had ordered the Pentagon shut down. Secure communication shut down in advance so when Kennedy was assassinated, they wouldn't be able to communicate with the chiefs of staff, and that effectively happened.
Well, when you think about it, both John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy angered a lot of people, the mafia, Castro, people who were very anti-union and, you know, people who were very much against civil rights and integration in this country. And those are issues and people that are very passionate and some that are very violent when they want to get their own way.
Well, exactly. And the thing that he was really highlighting for us was that Johnson was the person that had ordered the Pentagon secure communications to be shut down.
There are many people that feel that Johnson was responsible for JFK's death, including how quickly he got Jackie and the children out of the White House. They were only there for a couple of weeks. I mean, this is a woman with two young children. It's a very large home, taxpayers paid for. We'll be back. I want to hear more from you on that. Don't go away. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. If you like what you hear from me sitting in for him, I hope you'll listen to my show Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. Hi, this is Leslie Marshall, and thank you for watching the Tom Hartman Show on Free Speech TV. I'm sitting in for Tom, and let's take your calls and go back to calls. I was talking with Jeff in California about the Kennedy assassination, and Jeff was nice enough to share with us that his father, who was deceased now, Jeff, sorry for your loss, that his father was actually working with the government. And when everybody was saying Oswald killed Kennedy, your father said no, that it was Johnson. And if you could repeat what he said about the Pentagon and other communications being cut off, locked down, et cetera, so that word could not get out and help could not be on the way.
Exactly. Basically, he said that orders had been put in or put out by Johnson that all secure communications in the Pentagon would be shut down. And he said the second that Kennedy was assassinated, SecureCom went off, and that he and some of the other, the director of war plans, et cetera, were trying to get that order countermanded but were unable to do it, and they were unable to get out to the Joint Chiefs of Staff as well.
Would that have made a difference, Jeff? I mean, considering the medical situation, I mean, the president's, with all due respect, his brains were literally blown out. I don't think he ever would have survived being airlifted from Dallas, right?
Well, I don't think it's a difference in the survival of Kennedy. I think the point that I'm trying to make
is the reality of the American people and the lies our government tells.
Well, yeah, his clear information, at least from his side in the military position at Pentagon, that Johnson had a direct involvement with those orders happening, and they were made in advance of Kennedy's assassination.
Two things, Jeff. Why did your father believe, or why do you believe, that Johnson would have done this? And, I mean, there are different theories. I'm just curious as to what you have to say or what your dad said. And two, why do you think that no one, your dad included, wrote a book about this? Were they frightened?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how many people within the Pentagon sort of necessarily would have been directly influenced or impacted concurrent to the moment that was happening. You know, with the War Plans Department largely were responsible for being online 24/7 to respond to nuclear threats from Russia, for example. And of things to take offline, that had never happened in the history of the Pentagon, where that's happened before then or since then. If you put in the other factors into that, the coincidental factors, you know, it really appears that Johnson had some high interest in Kennedy being out, because I don't think it could have happened as easily had Johnson not wanted it.
All right.
You know, to control the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to control the military, McNamara was unreachable for a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And even even somebody who's sort of the in McNamara's position is going to have folks sort of sitting and waiting for any news that's happening around the world, particularly that's emergent news, to come and tell them, hey, this just happened. Russia
All right.
just did this thing. Or the president was just assassinated. Mm-hmm. But yet nobody did that.
And this was also a time when people wouldn't, although there were conspiracy theorists, and certainly a lot more after the assassination of Kennedy, certainly there were at the time of Lincoln. But as our nation grew, not only in number, but technology with the internet, and when we have more information revealed to us, current and past, about the government, I think it's easier for more people to buy, even looking back now, than they did then, that our own government could do this to our president, a father of two young children as well. Thank you for your call, Jeff. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. I hope you'll join us, 866-987-THOM. Somebody who joins me on my show, the Leslie Marshall Show, Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, a buddy of mine and the show, and good to hear him today as I sit in for Tom on the Tom Hartman Show. And that is UN correspondent for Talk Radio News Service, live from the finish line in at the Boston Marathon in Boston, Massachusetts, on Boylston Street, my hometown, Mr. Luke Vargas. Hi, Luke. How you doing? Happy Monday.
Hey, same to you. Hopefully you can hear me okay. There is sort of a network overload here at the finish, as you can probably imagine.
Tell us, I mean, I have so many questions to ask you. You know, we only have so much time. First of all, was there anything that surprised you about today that you didn't expect? I mean, you expect tributes, you expect tears, you expect a lot of Boston Strong banners and T-shirts. Anything you didn't expect?
Well, you know, I decided to go to two different places along the route. I've never come in the 10 or so years I've decided to attend the marathon, mostly as a school kid. I never came to the finish line, so it's very nice to be here right now. And it just sort of, just the emotions here surprised me. You know, I've seen so many tough things and emotional things in my reporting, but to be able to stand here at the finish line is quite touching, and just to take photos of the people making their way across the finish line. Well, what did surprise me was going to mile 15, where I actually used to go as a kid. This is sort of the halfway point in the suburb of Wellesley. Exactly, I went to the same old street and knocked on the same door where I used to go as a kid, and it was really nice to see the same very open atmosphere of the marathon that I remember from my childhood. This is the lack of barricades, the ability for families and kids to run across the road right before and after the packs of elite runners come through. You know, there were military police at every block, but they were the very friendly kind, the kind that would pet your dogs and chat with you, not guys with guns who were always scanning the crowd. So that was a real relief, and I think everyone I talked to who was waiting in a security line in downtown Boston, who was standing near a military police officer along the route, said they were cognizant of the fact it was very heightened security, but they were grateful for it. That was actually a reassuring thing. And a lot of the cops I spoke to said, look, this is a headache for us too, but do understand this is the one-year anniversary. It's probably not going to be like this forever. So I think luckily there is an anticipation that some of the inconveniences that may have occurred this year will abate in coming years.
And of course, if in fact the Tsarnaev brothers are, as alleged, the only two involved in this, very unlikely, obviously one deceased and one behind bars for the moment, that this would occur by these individuals, or that the same city would be targeted at the same day, same time, same manner again. And I say that because, you know, we tend to brace ourselves on those anniversaries and we think those numbers mean something. But I honestly, you know, they say lightning doesn't strike twice. Terrorists actually historically haven't shown to re-hit the same place, not only here, but worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, you can take comfort in that track record, but I think a lot of people did need to see the boots on the ground here.
Yeah.
I think there are still so many jitters, and just the numbers here. There are 9,000 people running this marathon who did not run last year, and close to 6,000 of them are people who were unable to finish last time and who were basically stopped because of the explosions last year, far short or very close to the finish line. So I think there are a lot of people for whom the emotional support is needed, and every police officer along the way really does send a positive message, even if, you know, we can try to rationalize it, you know, from a journalist standpoint or from an observer and say perhaps it's a little bit overkill. But again, I take comfort in the fact that I don't think it will be like this forever.
Luke, speaking of a couple of things, one, are there more spectators than last year, or were some people scared by what had occurred and decided to watch it on TV?
You know, I haven't seen the official estimates, but the unofficial ones this morning were for about 1 million people, which is close to double the turnout of last year. So between, you know, I think the emotional significance of this event now and the fact that an American one, this is pretty big news, actually, for an otherwise non-newsworthy event, which is typically won by Ethiopians and Kenyans, an American male by the name of Meb Keflezighi won the men's marathon. This is the first time that's happened since 1983. So you put all this together, and I think there really is a revitalization of the interest in the sport and a commitment from the people of Boston to celebrate this event. And, you know, we do have Patriots Day off. It's kind of a special thing for us Bay Staters. This is already a holiday.
Yeah.
But I think it's taken on quite a cathartic overtone as well, which makes it an all the more special event to celebrate.
Ironically, 83, I was standing right where you are. I was lucky. I had a friend who was dating a guy who had an apartment with a balcony overlooking Boylston Street and access to the roof.
Hey,
I wasn't standing right where you are in the ground, but I was able to watch the finish line. So I do remember when the American crossed in 83. Terrible. Don't remember that person's name. But, yes, an American crossed, and it's good to hear an American crossed again today. Do you think that the reason the unofficial number of the crowd – it is more than double, is this attitude, we're bigger, we're better, we're stronger, Boston's strong, we're back, you know, we've moved forward, you know, next, that kind of thing.
I, I do think a large part of it is that. And not everyone's here for the marathon. A lot of people come just a few blocks away from the marathon. They wear all the Boston Strong gear, and then they're playing, you know, sort of beer games and college parties. It's like kind of a frat party spilling out onto the streets of Boston and places.
Yeah, they're off. It's Patriots Day. There's no school. There's no work. Might as well drink, right?
I think that's the attitude a lot of people are embracing. And, you know, the bars and restaurants that were within the blast zone last year are jam-packed. It was actually very hard for me to even get to a semi-audible place to do this little segment because all along, maybe six blocks or so extending from the finish line, every single bar and restaurant is packed. So business is booming, and, you know, you would never know walking around here that anything happened last year. And that's a testament to, you know, to the organization of this event. And I've always applauded, you know, the way this event functioned. But, boy, under you know, pretty intense circumstances, I think they did a good job this year.
One of the things I noticed when I went back very quickly, Luke, less than a minute, there was no memorial there. And some people were kind of, you know, excuse the term, blown away by that. I certainly didn't mean it in that regard. But has anybody mentioned that who's an out-of-towner going, where's the memorial?
No, and I actually I haven't done research to see the name of the restaurant that was hit almost most directly, but I couldn't tell. There was nobody taking photos. I know there was sort of a media day the other day where people were taking photos at the finish line, but not much of that today. The focus is on the race and on cheering on the people who are racing. So for that, I think I'm glad we're not dwelling on the sites of those blasts.
Absolutely. Luke Vargas, UN correspondent for Talk Radio News Service, live from Boston, Massachusetts at the finish line of the Boston Marathon. Thank you, buddy.
I'm Leslie. Hey, take care.
Thank you. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. 1 hour more to come. Don't go away.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show. So please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, how you doing? Happy Monday and happy Patriots Day. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. In this hour, I definitely want to hear from you. We don't have any guests, so it's all about you. Your phone calls, whether you're listening on radio, online, or watching on Free Speech TV, the number is 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-THOM, which is 8466. In this hour, I want to throw another topic out on the table, maybe two. So for those of you emailing me, I don't want to talk about the Boston bombing. Here you go. But for those of you holding and want to say something about that, I'll give you the time. Because, you know, I really feel as a talk show host that the callers dictate the flow of the program. That's what talk radio is about, isn't it? The smallest neighborhood in America, as they said in the film Talk Radio, where you can see the poster behind me. There was a piece by Mary Alice Parks with ABC News online that I thought was a really great piece, and I want to give you a little backstory. First of all, the title, so that you'll understand where I'm going for a second. You know, it was actually a panel on This Week on ABC. Are evangelicals out of touch with mainstream views? And Mary Alice Parks wrote a great piece about it, like I said. Yesterday was Easter Sunday, and that is a holiday that many who are calling themselves Christians celebrate. Followers of Christ, it is the day they believe that Christ rose from the dead. Do not change the station and look away or turn away from listening. I'm not turning this into the 700 Club by Pat Robertson. I assure you and I promise you. Now, Tom touched upon this last week, but I wanted to touch upon it today because yesterday was Easter, and before that it was Passover and Good Friday. And I want to be very honest where I come from on this so that you understand. My father was Jewish. I say was because he passed away in 1992. My mother was Catholic, and when I was 16, she became a born-again Christian, a bona fide Jesus freak. And I say she was a Jesus freak because we didn't do Christmas. It was Jesus' birthday, complete with happy birthday Jesus signs on the lawn. And at 16, I began packing for college and couldn't wait to leave from the suburb of Boston to Northeastern University right in the city. I love my mom, and she has since chilled. We'll have a glass of wine, and she is now a Democrat, thanks to her daughter. And my mom definitely is still a Christian and believes as she believes and celebrated Easter yesterday. But I don't feel she's one of those evangelicals who is out of touch with mainstream views. When I got older, I met this guy who I married. And my husband of 17 years is from a Muslim family. You should have seen my wedding. Jewish, Christian, Muslim under one roof. Believe me, I could single-handedly have created a peace plan for the Middle East at my wedding if we got through that day without any problems. My husband does not practice Islam. And when we married, I was a practicing Christian until 2004. And in 2004, I had a son who passed away, a baby. And it was very hard for me. And I began to really question everything I had been brought up with. Now, for me, I had been brought up with Judaism, then Catholicism, and then Protestantism, because that's where born-again Christians and Pentecostals, Baptists, you know, that's the umbrella they come under, the heading they come under. And my husband actually had not been practicing, and he had his issues with religion. And then we both had our issues with God. The big guy upstairs, yeah, we had a lot of issues. But I started to do something I don't think enough people do, and this is just my personal opinion, which is question what we're taught by our parents with regard to religion. And I came away with that with many things. I don't believe in an afterlife anymore. I don't believe prayer changes anything, and I'm not trying to get you to get out there and slit your wrist because, oh, Leslie's such a nihilist naysayer. This is so negative. No, just hear me out. But one of the reasons I left Christianity, which I did in 2004, and I honestly have no regrets, and I want to be clear, I'm not an atheist, and I don't even know if you call me an agnostic. I do believe there is a supreme being, and I do believe, ladies and guys, it's a guy. It has to be. Menstrual cycles, menopause, pregnancy, has to be. What did he have against us? All joking aside, I do believe in a God. In God, in one God, one guy, one creator. I do. That's my thing. What's your thing? That's our First Amendment right, right? We have that freedom. I don't really subscribe to any organized religion because I find that almost every religion, Judaism, Islam, Christianity, all the others, have huge amounts of hypocrisy. And no offense to you, don't take it personally, but a lot of hypocrites within it. So let's talk about Christianity for a sec. I left Christianity in 2004 because, much like Gandhi, I could not find Christ among them. Now, the reason I give you that background is so that you know where I stand. And I give you that background, but I want you to know I do not hate Christians, and I do not think that all Christians are hypocritical. I love my mom, and some of my dearest friends are practicing Christians. But I do feel that evangelical Christians, the very Christian conservative faction of the GOP, are out of touch with mainstream views. And a lot of people talk about this, but I thought this article definitely hit the nail on the head. If you look at public opinion polls, there has been a change in public opinion in recent years. You've all heard of Billy Graham, right? Well, his son is Reverend Franklin Graham. And I think Billy Graham is perhaps in the United States one of, if not the most popular and greatest preachers of all times, right? Reverend Franklin Graham on ABC's This Week, on national television on ABC, reiterated his strong opposition to gay marriage and gay adoption. Now, here's two other things I want to speak to. No, I'm not gay. I am married to my husband. And if you are, that's great for you. But we have a 54% divorce rate in this nation. Many of us heterosexuals don't get it right. If two people love each other, why should we prevent them from getting married? Why do we need to define it? And why should our government be involved in the definition, quite frankly, or even in the practice of? There's another cash thing. Cha-ching. Marriage license. Give me some money. Marriage for people that I have known, or the desire for people that I know that are gay. One of my best friends is a lesbian. The desire to be married is to spend the rest of their life with that one person. The same as it is for us heteros. It might work out. It might not. Being that so many evangelicals view the homosexual community, especially the gay community, as promiscuous, you would think this is something that they want. Now, I know what the Bible says. I've read it cover to cover more than one time, including, yes, the Torah, the Old Testament, and the New, as I've read the Quran. And I understand that religions, I mean, if you look in California, when we had Prop 8, it was amazing. I mean, Latinos were against gay marriage because of the heavy Catholicism and their upbringing as Catholics. The African-American community, as Baptist and strong Bible-believing Baptist, although Democrats, could not vote against California's Prop 8. But if you look at the polls, more and more Americans are kind of feeling like, give it to them. Who cares? It doesn't affect you and me. Gay marriage didn't bring the Twin Towers down, certainly didn't kill those at the finish line in Boston. How is it hurting anyone? And speaking of gay adoption, I have two children. I have a 6-year-old daughter, she just turned 6, and a son who's soon to be 7. And my son I adopted from Pakistan. As an adoptive mother, I can tell you that all the children want in orphanages on the blue books here in the United States of America, more than 500,000, by the way. If you choose to adopt, please try and go that route. If you can't, internationally, there are thousands, if not millions, of children who need a mother and a father. That's all they want. And it doesn't have to be a mother and a father. They want a family. They want a parent. They want to be rescued from the orphanage. They want to belong to someone. So I ask you this afternoon, are the evangelicals out of touch with mainstream views in our nation today? 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-THOM. 866-987-8466. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom. Coming to your calls right after this. Don't go away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We're talking about evangelicals. Are they out of touch with mainstream America? What will that do in November, if anything, and 2016? Talk to me, 866-987-THOM. Hi, this is Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Thank you for listening and for watching us on Free Speech TV this afternoon. Let's go to the calls, the number 866-987-THOM, and I think you see the number on your screen, 866-745-2667. We have a lot of people calling. Let's start it out with Bob in Northern New Jersey. Hi, Bob. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I don't want to argue with you, but I just think you need to be careful when you say things like, why should the government be involved with marriage or gay marriage?
I don't think the government should be involved with defining marriage, and I honestly don't think that the government should give out licenses for marriage. That's my personal opinion. Why do I have to be careful of that?
Okay. Well, if you think the government shouldn't give out licenses,
Most weddings I've gone to, including my own, are performed by some individual. Most weddings I've been to are religious individual. For Jews, it would be a rabbi, Muslims, an imam, Catholics, a priest, Christians, a pastor, a reverend, a minister. Why do we need the government involved in that if we're truly practicing the idea of separation of church and state?
Well, the reason is because the government, when it grants a marriage license, which it does at the state level, mm-hmm. also grants a whole bunch of benefits. So the government is deciding who does and does not get those benefits. So if the government would say, for instance, just because you're married, it doesn't mean you get, you know, for instance, Social Security benefits and things like that, that would be fine. But they do. So
yeah, but all you need to do is all you have to do is have a certificate of marriage by the religious organization, notarized, et cetera, with your tax return, and that would take care of that.
No. Regardless, the government, long ago, made a decision, if you have that license, it will give you government-sanctioned benefits. So in other words, the government can't sort of, without like eliminating all those benefits of being married, and the government's basically decided it wants to subsidize marriage. So the government can't, the government's on the hook. That's the only thing I'm saying. I'm just saying it's, you got
to
be careful.
No, I don't have to be careful with my opinion. I have a First Amendment constitutional right to express it, which I am. I feel marriage is a very private thing. It's a very personal thing. And if it had been private and personal and kept that way, we wouldn't even be having this conversation as to who and who cannot marry. It offends me that most Western, most progressive nations in the world, we have to defend the rights of human beings to get married to each other in 2014. I'm offended by that, so I think the government should get out of it.
Well, then you'd be having the government taking away benefits from not only homosexual couples but heterosexual couples.
No, they don't have to take away. They don't have to take away the benefits. Again, that is, we can argue my opinion, but I'm not going to change my opinion. I feel marriage is private. I feel marriage is more for many people, something religious, or you know, just before you know their friends and family and the people that love them. And I also honestly do not feel that the definition of marriage needs to be defined by anyone except the two people or more in this country sometimes with polygamy that are entering into that union.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think I understand what you're trying to say.
Hold on. We're gonna come back. You're reminding me of my husband right now. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back right after this. Hey there, this is Leslie Marshall. We are going to continue to take your calls. We were talking before the break with Bob in Northern New Jersey. Bob, thank you for holding. I hear you're driving. Please be safe there. And Bob and I vehemently disagree, but go ahead, Bob. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. Go ahead.
No, I want to hasten to add, I'm driving with my cell phone hands-free.
I'm very, very proud of you.
To hear a crash, that didn't work. But anyway, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that the government's already got its nose into marriage, and the government long ago defined marriage between a man and a woman. And if you go through the law, there's hundreds of benefits that the law confers based upon marriage. So to say the government shouldn't be involved it doesn't work. The government's already got itself involved. What the government has done is restricted
marriage. Government doesn't have to define marriage, and I don't feel a marriage should be defined. And like I said, I feel like I feel like a dog chasing my tail here on this one. We disagree on that. I feel marriage is defined between the parties that marry and should be.
Well, the government has already defined a marriage the way it wants. The issue is it's given out benefits.
Yeah, and the government also allowed slavery and didn't allow women to vote, so that means we don't fight to try and change it?
No. I'm not saying we don't fight to. I mean, I think it's fine to change it. I think you just can't get away from saying the government has to proactively expand its definition of marriage.
Well, we agree to disagree, because I believe you can change not only the definition, you can change the way that marriage is allocated, who defines it or doesn't define it, et cetera, going forward. And that's my belief.
Well, the government could do that, because the government's defining who's getting benefits of marriage. You can't change the law without changing the law. You can't just say, well, I don't agree with the government, so anybody.
No, I never said not to change the law. I didn't, I'm not like looking at a bottle and pressing, rubbing it for Aladdin to come out.
Well,
obviously, you would have to change. Obviously, you would have to change the law. But my opinion of the law is that it does need to be changed. And those two areas are what I'm speaking of.
Now, what I'm saying is the government has decided, right or wrong.
I hear you. You hear me. We don't agree. What's up next?
Well, I don't know. I think you ought to say it differently. The government.
No, Bob. No, please, honey. Please don't be a man telling me a woman how to say something. I love you, but this is my job. I said it the way I mean it, and you said it the way you mean it, but we disagree. I appreciate your call.
All right. Bye-bye.
You understand why you think I feel like you're like my husband.
No, I think gay marriage is a great thing. I just don't think you can I don't think you can just simply say the government shouldn't be involved, that we're done.
I can say anything I damn well please.
You can, but I'm just saying it's completely incorrect.
An opinion is neither right or wrong. It is just that, an opinion. Thank you for the call, Bob. Okay. I you know what, guys? I do still have a pulse. My blood pressure is a little bit elevated after that. Let's continue with the calls. And let's go to, holding a very long time. Howard's in Pittsburgh, PA, watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Howard. How are you? Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. And that conversation that you just had, I agree with you.
No, you can't think that way, Howard. No, I'm just joking. Go ahead.
No, yeah, you didn't make me think that way.
I'm teasing.
I felt that way some time ago. But anyways, I feel that it's important that the 2014 election that we would win back the House and maintain the Senate. And I think I have an idea. I'll run it past you, see what you think. If myself as a Democrat, and I plan to do this, the two houses side of me, each side of me, and the two or three houses across the street, I'm going to, you know, knock on the door and say, you know, hey, I live over there, and I'm a Democrat. Are you a Democrat? If you are a Democrat, are you registered? Yes or no? You're not registered? Can I help you? You know, and pretty much that's my idea.
Let me tell you something. As simplistic as it sounds, Howard, it's extremely effective. If you look at all of the stats that come out, I'm going to give you an example. My crew on the Leslie Marshall Show, all my producers and everything, I'm on the West Coast. They're on the East Coast. And they went down to Ohio before the last presidential election. And those that are Democrats, I do have some Republicans that work, you know, with me and on the show, believe it or not. And those who were pro-Obama, whether they're Republican, Democrat, Independent, Green Party, Reform, whatever. And they went knocking door to door. It was amazing how many people weren't registered to vote. It was amazing how many people didn't realize they had to register in order to vote or didn't know where their polling station was, didn't know the day of the election. You know, many of us who are really into the news or, like for me, do this for a living, you know, we're tuned in perhaps on a different level than some people aren't. It doesn't mean we're on different level. It just means those people are really busy working hard, and maybe, you know, they're not aware of that. Not everybody has a computer. Not everybody has a television. Not everybody has the time to listen to, read, or watch what is going on in the news. Going door to door is mandatory. The really tight seats are red districts. Democrats are only going to win those if you have that one-on-one interaction and connection, in my opinion. I agree with you. We can't just sit back and say, well, we've got the women, we've got the African Americans, we've got the Hispanics, the Latinos, you know, we'll be fine. That's not going to work in some of these hotly contested districts within red states. They have to go door to door. One. Two, they have to speak to the people. And the people are saying, poll after poll after poll, and have been for a decade now, the economy. Just like James Carville said, it's the economy, stupid. So you need the grassroots effort, not just of the candidates and those working for them, but Democrats like yourself and me, Howard, I agree. You got to go door to door. You got to register people to vote. You got to encourage them to vote. And also when you go to the stats, because Republicans statistically have more people come out in a midterm election than Democrats. They have the older people for the most part. And they need to do that because, of course, the Republicans have demonized Obamacare. Even polls show that the approval rating is turning around and favoring Democrats. That's not the key issue. The economy and job creation is the key issue, has been and still continues to be, and it's essential you go door to door. Scott Brown won Massachusetts at one time doing just that. You know what? Shaking hands and kissing babies goes a long way in politics. It did then. It still does today in 2014. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. Back to your calls and more right after this, 866-987-THOM.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Hi, I'm Leslie Marshall. If you like what you hear on Tom's show, follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall and check out my show, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com forward. Hi, How you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman. You can follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall, and you can check out my show Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream if you want to hear the stream through the website. Let's go to your calls. You can call us at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M, which is 8466. And back to the calls. We have a lot of people that have been holding for a very long time. And let me see, to be fair, who's been holding the longest? I think Sarah in Utah has watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Sarah. How you doing? Good afternoon.
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, gee, it's been so long. I had lots of things to talk about.
I'm sorry for the wait time.
Oh, that's just fine. It's very interesting. I just wanted to say that we need to remember that disobedience is very important. We need to remember that critical thinking skills are real important. And we need to remember that balance is really important. And these are all things that the evangelicals lack.
That's very true. Very true.
And that's why they're out of touch, because, you know, they're out of touch. I'm calling.
Well, will that help Democrats, do you think, in elections or non-Republicans?
Now say that again.
Will that help Democrats, independents, non-Republicans going forward? Because it seems as the rest of the nation progresses, because I look at the nation as becoming much more social, much more liberal on social issues, maybe, you know, conservative or moderate on fiscal issues, but socially on issues such as gay adoption or gay marriage, even the legalization of marijuana, et cetera. I see even many Republicans, especially the youth, in the Republican Party, you know, becoming more tolerant and accepting of those platforms.
Oh, I agree completely. The evangelical ideals are embedded in the older people, and the younger people don't agree, and they're not going to change that much as they age. Most of those old values are dying out, and hallelujah for that.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah. Very well said. I know you were holding a long time, and thank you for holding and for making that comment. Let's go to WBAI in Manhattan with Tom. Hi, Tom. How are you doing? Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
While I was listening, I noticed you said you were a Democrat.
Yep.
And you feel that the Democrats really haven't gotten out there and, you know, to register more voters.
Right, and the Republicans are. The Republicans are working very hard, especially in the red states.
But frankly, I think you're missing a main point. I think the majority of people in this country do not vote, not because they're lazy or they don't know how to register to vote, but because they realize that despite what the Democrats say, that is that they are for the working people, that the Democratic Party, just as the Republican Party, gets most of its money from the 1%, from the ultra-rich on Wall Street, and this money is not given without strings, and that the leadership of the Democratic Party, their policies are essentially very similar to the Republican Party.
Well, definitely there are people that don't vote because they don't think there's a lot of a huge difference between the two parties.
Right.
But specifically, the door-to-door, the door-to-door effort that they put forth, especially for Barack Obama's reelection, was effective in him gaining certain states. Ohio was one of them. So when the other gentleman called Howard and said he thinks that makes a difference, I agree. I never said the majority of people don't vote because people aren't going door to door. I'm saying door to door, knocking door to door, can make a huge difference in whether somebody wins or loses a state.
Environment. Just to give you an example, he says all of the above. Continue fracking for gas, drilling for oil, digging for coal, subsidies for the big fossil fuel companies, very little investment in renewable energy. Look at this foreign policy.
Yeah, but look at this too, Tom. If you stay home, you also can't vote.
I don't stay home, by the
no,
way.
No, not you. But if somebody stays home because they don't think there's much difference between a Democrat and a Republican, you're still not replacing your incumbent, even if they're a Democrat who is not doing what you want and you feel has been bought by a huge corporation.
They are bought by the corporations. By the way, I do vote, and I urge people to vote, but not for the Democrats or the Republicans. I urge people to vote for independent parties.
I vote for the person. I may be a Democrat, but I do not vote for the party. I vote for the individual I feel best suits what I believe and best aligns themselves with my ideals.
Then why do you stay with the Democrats?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I wanted to vote in the primary. I'm an independent, and at the time, I wanted to vote in the primary. I was an independent for many years, and I was chided by a lot of my liberal friends that I wasn't a Democrat. So I became a Democrat because I didn't want to be known as a Republican, to be honest. And I read every bit of that 686, I think, page platform of both, and the 45 at the time civil libertarian platform. And that was the party that I felt that my ideals aligned with most. So that's why I became a Democrat, but it was to vote in the primary, quite frankly.
And one other thing, if I may, about whether evangelicals are out of step with the American public. Frankly, I think that with the exception of people living in cities like New York or Boston or San Francisco, that evangelicals are more in step with the majority of Americans than people who are free thinkers or people who are agnostics or are very liberal Christians. In fact, the
So you think that being against gay marriage, being against gay adoption, being against the legalization of marijuana, and the list goes on, being against and wanting to overturn Roe v. Wade, being against a woman's reproductive rights, the rights to choose, being against Planned Parenthood and things like that, you think that's more in line with the majority of American thinking?
Well, I think that on social issues there are changes, and that seems to be a generational gap. But when it comes to belief, do you know the majority of overwhelming majority of people in this country, whether they're Christians or not, believe in sort of a patriarchal, super masculine God sitting in heaven?
That's true. The majority of Americans believe in God. Yes, the majority of Americans polled in poll after poll consider themselves pro-life, but the majority of those who are pro-life also do feel that a woman has a right to make that decision for herself in compliance with the law.
Yeah, on that issue, the Republicans are giving in on that issue, but you know, these social issues like abortion or gay marriage, they really do not affect the bases of our economy.
When I agree wholeheartedly, issues, but they are huge push-button issues in elections. They're huge push-button issues in elections. Some people vote just based on guns. Some people vote just based on abortion. Some people vote just based on gay marriage or anything to do with gays. I mean, unfortunately, I think it's myopic of an individual just to want to vote for a candidate or against a candidate based on one issue. And you are absolutely right. It does not affect 99.999% of us individually and personally. But I would disagree with you, Tom. Appreciate the call there in New York. I would disagree with you wholeheartedly that evangelicals are more in step with mainstream America than free thinkers. I think that's the reason they're called free, right? Because they're thinking more freely. But hey, I could be wrong. Let's go to Roger. Roger is listening on TomHartman.com. Thank you. They're in North Florida. Hi, how you doing, Roger?
Hey, how you doing? I heard your story about distancing yourself from Christianity. And I had a recent story of distancing myself also from Christianity, but in general from traditional religion. Being a writer, I don't know if you would allow me to, but being a writer, I recounted a little piece of it in writing, and I would have liked to read it.
How long is it? And it's not personal. It's just we only have so much time.
Okay, yeah, it's not very long. It's quite short, but it's to the point.
Okay, go ahead.
I say, being a man of reason, which is a kind of radical honesty, I could not recognize a living Christ either in me, in my local Christian community, or in our national Christian community. After being baptized in my hometown for the first time as an adult, I was not made into a new person as I continued in all my doubts and stubborn humanistic hopes of seeing real, demonstrated love in a real human community. I continued also in what I conceived as my own personal weaknesses in expecting that even I could not so love without Christ, whom I did not in the end perceive myself having, since I did not experience him among those claiming to have him. Looking at the Christian leaders and congregation in my local community, I saw insufficient evidence of a living Christ, which made them significantly different from other human beings, although I have found some which I call friends. These are roused to greater kindness than the average non-Christian, I must admit, but not to the level where I would feel the charisma of Christ, not to the degree where I can say that only by a living supernatural source do these people love.
Well, you know what, Roger, I appreciate you sharing that. Unfortunately, I think it went longer than the segment that we had there. We're going to take a break. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. More of your calls right after this. Don't go away.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Leslie Marshall. Check out my website, LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern's my show, and follow me on Twitter, at Leslie Marshall. Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Thank you for watching on Free Speech TV. Let's go to your calls, and let's go to Boynton Beach, Florida. Charles is watching on Free Speech TV. How you doing, Charles? Good afternoon. You know what? We'll go back to Charles. I think his phone maybe went out, just a bit there. Let's go next to Greg in North Dakota watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Yeah, hi. I was going to give you about the death penalty. I don't know about, but I would rather be put to death than sit in one of them prisons for a life sentence. I know that.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Some people say it's a lesser punishment to kill them and to execute them than to lock them up for life, especially if you have like 23-hour lockdown like they have in Pelican Bay.
Oh yeah, and then those places that are all cinder block and steel. I mean, yeah. I've been in to a local law enforcement jail and seen it, and they're just dehumanizing. And but anyway, the Boston Marathon, it finally got flight 307 off CNN for a while.
I don't mean to laugh about, I mean, I just think it's funny because there's even articles about why are we so obsessed about that plane, and obviously the obsession lies in how could something just disappear, where are those people, and our desire, our desire just to know what happened. Also the voyeurism, you know, when you're on the freeway, people stop to look at the accident.
Yeah.
You know, we definitely have a lot of that.
I think they said there's a cyclone kind of hitting Indian Ocean soon. So now we'll be hearing all about that.
Yes.
And, can I give you an impersonation of my Kennedy assassination?
I don't know if that would be such a good idea because I don't know what's coming there, Greg, and I got to be careful. It's not my show. I'm sitting in for Tom, but thank you for the offer, and thank you for the call. Let's try Charles once again. We'll give him one more shot there in Boynton Beach. Hopefully he's back in range watching on Free Speech TV or wherever his phone is. Hi, Charles. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how you doing there in Boynton Beach? Thank you for watching on Free Speech TV.
The point I wanted to make, I had heard earlier about with the Catholic Church. I was with the Catholic Church for 27 years, and I was with the Knights of Columbus. And part of my problem was when they started telling me from the pulpit who I had to vote for, I found that, you know, overstepping the lines.
I mean, with you.
Who I vote for is my business, and they have no right to tell me who to vote for, who not to vote for. And second, I think that organized religions basically are the problems. You don't have to go to church to be holy. You can sit in your house and read the Bible.
Huh?
And it's every time now that they're starting to put their views into your head at an early age, and by the time you're 21 or 22, it's basically they, you know, you're just doing what they're telling you to do.
Many people do feel that they're indoctrinated. Absolutely, Charles. Thank you for your call. I remember saying to my mom, "Mom, what if you're wrong?" And then she said, I'm not. I'm like, why won't you question? It's even like, I won't question. It's okay to question. Didn't God give us a brain? I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We're going to be back right after this. Don't go away. How are you? I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Program. Let's get to those calls. We've got a lot of them about this hour's topic and others that we have discussed throughout the afternoon. Let's go to Mike in Indiana. Hi, Mike. How are you? Good afternoon.
Hi. How are you doing?
Hi. Can you turn your radio down? There's a delay, and it might be confusing to you and the listeners.
I actually have it completely off. I think I'm actually in the heart of Republican land. I'm in the country. So it might just be my signal.
Well, just stay on the phone with me, and I'll protect you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. What did you have to say this afternoon?
All right. Well, I live in a very rural religious community, and as far as this whole issue of gay marriage, you know, me personally, I can care less. But two people decide to do on their own. I got two cousins. They're gay. I love them to death. They're great people. And if they wanted to get married, I would have absolutely nothing against that. I mean, that's their business. I'm not gay. I wouldn't necessarily understand it. But, hey, that's what they want to do. Fine. My thing is, what if for some reason the evangelicals in this country were to say, you know what, we want to so protect this religious right of marriage and, you know, the sanctity that, you know, God defined marriage this way. If they were to say, what if we were to take all these little tax credits and stuff off the table and just go ahead and say, you know what? What you guys decide to call on your own within your religious practice, whatever you decide to call it, and just leave it at that and take the government out of marriage? I mean, what was your thoughts and feelings be on that?
Well, quite frankly, Mike, I think there are a lot of people out there. I mean, you know, you can be married and file jointly or separately. So not everybody takes advantage of the tax credit. For my husband and I personally, even though we file jointly, it's really not a huge amount of difference how much we pay or if we, God, oh, it would be lovely to get a refund. I haven't seen one of those in years. I really, you know, I don't see that, you know, there are huge amounts of benefits with taxation, and I think that almost any accountant can probably get you the same depending on how they itemize your deductions.
Well, I'm in school. I'm a fireman. I'm a paramedic. I'm constantly trying to improve myself. I'm going to school. Hopefully one day I'd like to go in the law. And I have had the opportunity to try to study the tax code, which was mind-numbing. And I can definitely see that there isn't a whole lot when you break it down, difference between what a single person is taxed and to what a married couple is taxed. The difference comes in on how they tax you. As far as, like, if I was single and you were married and we're both making $50,000, the government says, all right, you got two people. We're going to go ahead and tax you at $25,000 because you're splitting your income by, you know, two people.
But right now, as you know, there is a lot of movement, a lot of lobbying, and even the president supporting, and certainly those in both parties, just in a different way, to reform the current tax code. To close tax loopholes. So when wouldn't this be the perfect time to include that in the reformation of the tax code?
Absolutely. But unfortunately, I don't think that would work just because there's too many people benefiting from the loophole.
Because we also have to look at the history. Why are we benefiting people who are married? You know, what are we saying with that as a society? And by the way, this is a benefit that may eventually go away just as we evolve. Less and less people are getting married. More and more people are just living together, whether they have children or not, and less people are having children.
Well, absolutely. I completely agree with you on that because the more that you work and try to build something, you know, and the more educated you are, you know, raising children is very hard and it's very taxing. And
very expensive.
It's hard to separate.
Yes, absolutely.
I think we've become. I mean, I love my kids, but do I ever think, oh God, how great things were sometimes without them? Where my husband and I would go, hey, let's go away for the weekend, and we had the time and the money. Absolutely.
Right,
hey, Mike.
Absolutely.
Hey, listen. Thank you for calling. My cousin in Swansea, Massachusetts, is a paramedic, a firefighter, and an EMT. And my cousin in Florida, although a Republican, is a sheriff and a firefighter, because in his community in Florida, they have they don't have funding to have separate. So everybody's kind of got to do double duty. So keep it up. That's a very admirable profession, and that you are trying to better yourself with education and to go further in your career. That's very admirable, Mike. Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Let's go to Kenny in Victorville, California. How you doing, Kenny? Good afternoon.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
Good.
My question, and I'm a young man who's just getting wrapped up into the whole mission thing. I once heard a minister who was asked the question, who do you vote for? Said that we vote for the lesser of the two evils. And it sparked something in me that the lesser of the two evils, because our Heavenly Father once told us that there's no agreement that we are to have with evil. And I see that that's what we're doing, is coming to agreement with evil. Now, is it the fact that we are to separate, evolve from our biblical standpoint? Or is it the fact that we ought to bring them together? And how do we do that?
Well, I can't answer that because I don't base my life on the Bible, Kenny. If you're saying biblical standpoint, your phone is breaking up a little bit there. So I apologize if I couldn't, you know, hear you as well and answer as well there. Less than 60 seconds. Let's go. I'm sorry. Oh, 15 or 50? 10 seconds. Okay, I don't have time to take more of your calls. I'm sorry. Hey, but if you want to hear me some more, hopefully I'll be sitting in for Tom again. Leslie Marshall here for Tom Hartman. Check out his website, TomHartman.com. Check out mine, LeslieMarshallShow.com, and tune into my show, LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. I broadcast 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. You can follow me on Twitter, @LeslieMarshall, and I hope you will. Have a great afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to come into your cars, your offices, your living rooms, and your lives for 3 hours. It's been an honor. I love Tom, and all of you are great to listen, to watch, and to tune in, and to join me. Thank you very much. I'm Leslie Marshall. Once again, the website, LeslieMarshallShow.com.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.